How is the United States enlisting and supporting a Marxist terrorist organization in the Middle East and pretending that we're fighting for freedom? Read Our Terrorist Ally in Syria by my brother, Nicholas Cass, in the American Conservative. Nick, for years, served in the CIA, the State Department, and the National Security Council. He knows what he's talking about. More than I know about Chicago politics, if that's possible. And Jeff Carlin is here, as always, my friend, good friend, and husband of Christine, and executive producer at WGN Radio. And me, I'm John Cass. I'm the editor of johncassnews.com, where you always get a good cup of common sense. And where are you with the United States fronting you off that we have an ally in Syria and doesn't tell you that the ally is actually the terrorist PKK? You're on the Chicago Way podcast with Jeff Carlin, John Cass, and my brother Nicholas Spiridon Cass on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power, and it's the Chicago way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago way.
The Chicago way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
As promised, my younger brother, Nicholas Cass, who spent 30 years, 30 plus years, as a senior official in CIA and the State Department, and the National Security Council. When you hear about the deep state, know this. My brother Nick can't stand them either and thinks that they're dangerous to the essence of what America used to be about. Nick, welcome to the Chicago Way.
Hi, John. Hi, Jeff. How are you guys today? Thank you for having me back.
Oh, of course. Great to have you. Another fantastic, illustrative piece. And this time in the American Conservative. I mean, it's if people don't feel like their kids or even themselves got the education they needed on world affairs, especially when it comes to Mediterranean and Middle East region. Nick, you bring it home. I mean, it's a stark contrast to the idea of what American ideals were when I was a kid. I feel like we've kind of whipsawed into this weird world. But the gist is that, and let me lay it out from what I took away from it, that war interests make strange bedfellows, but the U.S. is with aligned with the strangest.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, Nick.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, thank you very much, guys. I really appreciate it. Yeah, it's created apparently quite some stir on both sides of the Atlantic. So that's good to hear and good to see. I think what I find fascinating about it is not only the intrinsic issue of Syria and the United States activity there and all the pathologies and challenges that normally we would face there, but also the extent to which this is a window into way Washington works almost across the board. It's what I'm trying to describe here is also the Washington process, which can be very obscure and inscrutable, to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So it's not just the esoteric Middle East, but it's esoteric Washington. And what we're seeing there in the case of Syria policy has been duplicated in other areas as well. And I think it's time, particularly during election year, for the American people, to the extent they're interested, to to pay attention and to take a look at it and to see how their nation's capital, the imperial capital, operates allegedly in their name.
Well, the piece is called In the American Conservative, the article by Nicholas Spiridon Cass. Spiro is my father, our father, Spiro's Cass. The piece is called Our Terrorist Ally in Syria. And under it is a subhead, Washington's biggest problem in Syria is that its principal partner is a radical secularist terrorist group seeking power in a vast area of the predominantly Muslim Middle East. Okay, can we boil this down? How the hell did the United States find themselves allied with the terrorist cell? What is it called?
Kurdistan Workers Party. Called the Kurdistan Workers Party. It's a Marxist origin, secularist totalitarian movement that's been operating originally in Turkey and has been operating in the region now for about 40 years since its first attack in 1984. About 40,000 people have died. Many of the victims have been Kurdish, because one of the favorite targets of the PKK is to go after what they consider to be the feudal social structure of the actual existing Kurdish people. And so you have the same kind of revolutionary ideological approach, dehumanizing approach being applied to the Kurds. And so it's greatly the great irony that in many respects, in many places, in the United States, people just consider the PKK to be, quote unquote, the Kurds. But if you talk to Kurds, the PKK is actually an anti-Kurdish group. It's against the traditions and the culture and the religion of the real Kurdish people. Wants to wipe that all away in the favor of Marxism and or Marxist-derived ideologies. And it's just really, again, one of the tragedies of the region that this group is now the principal avatar of the United States in promoting its interests in the Middle East.
I don't mean to jump in, but I have to, because why is it important to people? Should it be important to people in the Midwest? Because if you have children, or if you know anyone who's a young person, do you really want them to get caught up in a war in the Middle East between the United States and its allies? And the ally is a communist group that is promoting all the nonsense that from the rainbow flag that they keep pushing. I don't even know how that happens, but how did it happen, Nick? How did we become the ally of the communist group in the Syrian Defense Forces? How did that
happen? I mean, it really started back in with the Iraq War, where the United States basically launched an unprovoked attack on Iraq to the pretext of the WMD issue, as you recall, and basically destabilized the entire region as a result of this.
Back when I was a Republican, that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 20 years ago. I mean, literally destabilized Iraq, destabilized Syria. It threatened to destabilize maybe other places as well. And the United States was scrambling to try to reassert some modicum of order when ISIS emerged from the remnants of what was happening in Iraq and Syria at the time. And so in a bid to find a way to combat ISIS, and I think also to promote an American order in the Middle East that the Americans had destabilized, they decided to partner with the Kurdistan Workers Party, the PKK, because these were hardened terrorists who had learned their trade in combating Turkey and local Kurds, and were considered a cheap and easy way to effectuate U.S. policy in the area. And of course, it was extraordinarily short-sighted. The problem with the PKK, of course, in the Middle East, is if you're going to try to project influence in an area that had already been subjected to, militant activity, militant Islam-rooted activity, or quote-unquote jihadist activity, then maybe using a radical secularist terrorist organization as your principal tool was not advisable. And of course, what we've seen is an effort by the PKK to continue to grow expand its influence and power on the basis of our support of it in Syria. That's where the relationship really took off. And of course, it's a completely alienated our relationship with Turkey. It has encouraged Turkey to become much more independent and even more assertive in the region. And so, for example, if people look at, you know, Turkey's effort to reach out to Putin or its rising stridency in the Aegean, you know, I would ask everybody just to consider to what extent the United States contributed to that. And I would say they contributed to it greatly by an act by partnering with a PKK, which could not fail to be seen as an act of strategic hostility to Turkey, and started to create this accelerate this divergence. Now, there are a lot of other spinover effects there as well. I mean, right now we're talking about trying to isolate Iran. You know, if you're alienating Turkey, it's going to be hard to isolate Iran. You know, we want to isolate Russia. Well, the Turks have decided that with American hostility staring in the face, they need to find ways to take care of their own interests. You know, the Greeks are perpetually worried about Turkish aggression in the Aegean. To the extent that Turks have become even more aggressive or assertive in the Aegean, I think it's in part a way to demonstrate to the United States that there are consequences for the foolishness of its strategic lack of strategic foresight. And so you can see all the spinoffs, and particularly in a moment now in the Middle East where you have the war in Gaza, first a horrific terrorist attack by Hamas against the Israelis on October 7th, and the subsequent catastrophic Israeli operation that's going on there right now, which has convinced many, many people in the Middle East that the United States is complicit in, from their perspective, in a war to destroy a Muslim people. And at the same time you have that going on, of course, you're supporting the PKK, secularist terrorist group in Syria. So it shows you that on the ground, it's absolutely just a horrible way to sort of promote U.S. interests. As a matter of fact, it's very counterproductive. But I think what's really interesting for the American people is how we got to the point where we created this policy. And that tells us a lot about the pathologies of Washington itself. And that, again, as I said earlier, it's really important for us to take a look at that because it's duplicated in so many other areas, not just in Ukraine, but I would say also on the border. I would say in terms of a lot of the deep state activity that we're seeing and have seen in the last 7 or 8 years. All of this is of a piece. There are different manifestations of the same sort of pathology. And so I think it's really instructive for people to look at this as a way to understand how Washington works.
And Nick, I mean, you're a student of history of much renown, and you know, the U.S. is not new to picking, you know, kingmakers or trying to be picking losers, winners and losers in various places of the globe and throughout time. How does this, you see this being different from, you know, us meddling in South America or meddling in other places in the Middle East? Now you mentioned Ukraine. How is this varied from our historical, you know, pushing our own agenda or trying to keep a foot in the door in various places?
Well, I think what the big difference between this and, let's say, Latin America, perhaps, is the extent to which this is seen as a regional project against another civilization on planet Earth.
Sure.
Whereas, you know, whatever was happening in Latin America, and I'll let Latin America experts talk about some of the foolishness there, it wasn't seen as something that comes amid a class of civilizations or in the aftermath of 9/11, where we decided that we were going to take engage in a global war against terrorism. Remember, that was a big thing, right? The global war against terror in support of democracy.
Crusaders for democracy. Yes.
Yes, and President Bush actually used that word. Yeah. Remarkable. But coming at the time of a so-called war, a global war against terrorism, a war for democracy and human rights, the idea of supporting a Marxist terrorist organization just flies completely in the face of that. It's counter to the actual stated principles of American policy in the Middle East, and it creates precisely this idea that it's not just a policy or a fight against ISIS, but a fight against Islam. The other part of this is that in order to sustain that, or actually to even launch it, required an extraordinary amount of subterfuge and misinformation and outright lying and half-truths from Washington directed toward the American people. In other words, the interest of this sort of imperial project to make the world safe for democracy in the Middle East and to turn Raqqa into a Dixville Notch or something like that, or Afghanistan, as the case may be, in the previous, in another area, CENTCOM area, a little out of area there. But the idea that they were going to do this, create this empire, actually required subterfuge on such a scale that it corrupts, deeply corrupts the Republic. So the Republic, the actual runnings of our Republican institutions, smaller Republican institutions, are threatened by this imperial overreach, in part because of the lies and the BS and the sleight of hand and the manipulation that goes into getting the sort of quote-unquote legitimacy for this operation in the first place. And so, for example, the PKK is a bloody Marxist terrorist organization, right?
Right.
So we wanted to partner with its avatars in Syria, where they were busy crushing other Kurdish groups and anybody who was standing in its way. We wanted to partner with those people. So we simply lied. We simply lied to the American people that about the nature of this group. We didn't register, we didn't recognize them as a terrorist group, even though the intelligence community and others had publicly said on occasion
that the
PKK, that the YPG, shall we say, the Syrian element of the PKK, was in fact the PKK Syrian militia. And we decided just to go past that. And then some generals in at CENTCOM, the Central Command, decided that we needed to thereby rebrand the PKK as something called the Syrian Democratic Force. So we now are blessing them with a democratic moniker, and that legitimized all their activities. And they run around Washington, and they have legal representation, and they meet with think tanks and with journalists, and they represent themselves as in the same way that Stalinists would want to do in different eras, where they try to pretend that they're Democrats and listening and have good ideas and all of this sort of thing. They're pro-religion.
Well, you're and pointing the reality, out they're not pro-religion. They're communists. And the Syrians know that.
But not only do the Syrians know that, everybody in the region knows that.
Yeah.
And the only people who don't know that are the American people in whose name this is being conducted. And again, it points to the fact that the Americans people seem to be the last to know, as always, what's really going on with their own government and state.
We are speaking
is a tragedy. Yeah.
We're speaking to Nicholas Cass, longtime CIA and State Department official, National Security Council, also the United States government's senior and most experienced hand when it comes to the Aegean and Asia in that area. And he writes in the American Conservative this paragraph: the U.S. faced a dilemma with the rise of ISIS in 2014 in Syria and Iraq, a consequence on the American war of the American war in Iraq, which generated a persistent power vacuum and region-wide instability, including the subsequent Syrian civil war. Unwilling to make large military commitments of its own against ISIS, Washington needed partners, preferably ones who did not insist too much too soon on their own equities. Thus, the Obama administration settled on supporting the PKK elements operating in Syria. Mm-hmm. Barack Obama presented the world with this issue, and we have not yet been able to extricate ourselves. Yes?
Yeah, exactly. And as a matter of fact, President Trump tried to stop that, tried to extricate us from that.
Right.
And He almost got thrown out of office because, if you remember, in the 2019 period, he was facing the first impeachment, Democrat and deep state orchestrated impeachment effort. And a lot of the establishment Republicans, I believe, thought that this was a maximum moment of vulnerability to insist on some of their core pet projects.
So like Trump this.
Tried, yeah. Like this one. And so when Trump tried to get out of Syria, the establishment Republicans were so angry at him. I think it underscored to everybody that the president was very, very vulnerable to being ousted. And obviously that had its effect on things.
Romney,
when you're fighting for survival, you can't think of other policies. You just have to try to fight for survival.
Romney pushed it. Mitch McConnell pushed it. And President Trump, you know, he didn't, you weren't his senior hand at the CIA then, or you could have. I wondered if
I was at the White House then.
Yeah, but I mean, you were in the NSC, but you weren't a policymaker in that sense, were you? You couldn't go, Mr. Trump, and you can, not that I don't want to betray sources and methods, but you weren't in a position to tell Mr. Trump that he was being had by his own party, were you?
Well, I mean, that would be something that would be for the political side. At the time, I was not a political appointee. I was a regular staff appointee.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, our job in those cases is to try to coordinate different views from all over the interagency, the government interagency. I mean, everybody has a different view generally on different policies, or they might have the same view. And we can also synthesize that and bring our own expertise to bear in trying to make sure that the president and the national security advisor are ready for their meetings. And so I'll just say that, you know, having had some experience in the area in Turkey and with this knowledge of this particular problem, you know, it was a very, very interesting and enjoyable time in my career to be down there. But I think that go ahead. I'm sorry.
And I will say, from spending my lifetime not in, you know, in the hills in Syria and elsewhere, in other places that we can't even talk about, but I spent it in Illinois watching politicians of the combine, the Republican half of the combine, the Democratic half of the combine. And all I noticed is that they chopped any weed down that wasn't part of their thing. And that what you have now is a wasteland. The only person qualified to write about the wasteland of Illinois is T.S. Eliot. Because, seriously, you know, the women come and go, speaking of Michelangelo, and Pritzker's blabbing away, and the reparations are going to eliminate property tax for black people. It's the whole thing is nonsense, but you know, it's done.
Well, I mean, I think it's, again, it's a species of the same problem. The establishment, you know, on both parties has a particular point of view. President Trump's view was a different one. Unfortunately, he was facing an impeachment at the time.
Right.
At the time, and was vulnerable to the reprisals of many GOP people in particular, because had they deserted him, it could have been disastrous for the country. I mean, it could have been an actual conviction. So
they call that a coup in Syria, don't they?
Well, they call it, I mean, I've written about this, about comparing what had happened to President Trump to the deep state coup of 1997 in Turkey. I've written a couple of articles about it.
Right.
And so I invite all your readers to go back and look and compare what happened in Turkey 27 years ago, which had a seminal and enormously profound impact on subsequent Turkish political developments, to what's happening in the United States today, and to understand that what is happening now will have an enormous effect for the next generation. So what we're seeing here is not going to be defeated, whatever happens to Jack Smith or these other fellows who are prosecuting Trump, it's not going back to the status quo ante. They have permanently altered the political culture here, and the implications of this are going to be very, very profound. So, but just to get back to why I think this is so important for people to look at, and I think it's a digestible story. It's very interesting in the sense that, you know, again, we're trying to fight ISIS or keep or, shall we say, achieve the enduring defeat of ISIS, whatever that means,
right,
by using a Marxist terrorist group, which is likely to spur reaction among
anti-American hate. Yeah.
Well, not only anti-American hate, but also, you know, I mean, there are a lot of people out there who are just regular people who are not jihadists, whatever that term is, or radicals, militants, but can't be easily radicalized when a Marxist comes into your village and tells your, you know, your wife or your husband that this is how they should live their life. So that's going to happen. But that suits the interest of the pyramid bureaucracy, which doesn't want to really change the policy. So as I call it in the article, it's a self-licking ice cream cone. It becomes this, it becomes this machine that justifies its very existence by, you know, by continuing to point to a threat that in itself, to some extent, is replicating and generating. So that should be understood by the American people. The American people should also understand the extent to which the foreign policy or the bureaucracies engage in misinformation or whatever it is to make their points. And of course, what's the most fascinating about that is they are the biggest purveyors of misinformation, disinformation, and yet they use that campaign against disinformation to give them to maintain their monopoly on misinformation and disinformation. There was a a story in Turkey many years ago. I think it might be apocryphal. I'm not sure, but it was a bunch of Kemalist generals sitting around, and somebody was talking about the challenge of communism and the threat to of communism. And the generals, one general spoke up and said, if there's going to be communism in this country, it's because we will bring it. In other words, the important thing was that they had control over the process, right? And yeah. I think you're seeing some of that being played out in this case. And so in the case of the PKK, we decided that we were going to, or the United States decided that it was not going to acknowledge the Syrian element of PKK as a terrorist group. They were going to rebrand this as a group that is a democratic movement, help enlist NGOs and all these alphabet soup organizations to perpetuate the falsehood. And yet in the region, you know, people aren't obviously fooled by all that, and they see what's going on. And so I have many friends in the Kurdistan region of Iraq, very senior people, who tell me all the time, we try to warn people about this, and nobody's listening. Nobody's listening to the idea or to what we're saying about the implications here. Finally, President Netjervan Barzani spoke out and said, you know, the PKK is a threat to other countries and elements in the region. So we have created this situation, in a sense, and we're trying to perpetuate it by, you know, our unwillingness to confront the reality. So I hope that, in a way, that this kind of helps shed some light on that reality.
Well, the difference is they can gaslight anyone they want, and they're able, they do a good job of it. They're doing a good job of it here in the United States. Look at what what's happening with the January 6th Commission, what was released, what was not released. I was just looking at watching CNN and Dana Bash rip on President Trump for daring to talk about a bloodbath, like as if he wanted people, Americans, in a bloodbath, like a war, when he was really talking about the auto industry.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just this ability to gaslight might work with the awfuls in the United States, but I don't think it works well in the Middle East. I mean, they've already seen it, that you can't trick them anymore, can you?
Yeah, you cannot tell people there that, you know, we're fighting for democracy Right. You can't.
Right.
And I think that that is, again, but the important thing of all this misinformation is that it's directed to the last people who get it, which is the American people. Because right. what they want is absolute freedom of maneuver. They don't want, you know, no matter what they talk about with respect to democracy and the rules-based order, they don't want that stuff getting in the way of their ability to make policy.
Right.
Remember how Obama used to talk about, I have a pen and a phone, and you would use the pen and the phone to run roughshod over whatever the Congress was doing or not doing? Well,
because
I mean,
elections have consequences, right?
Yes, but yeah, indeed. And the point of all this is that these things, the accumulation of this stuff over time has consequences. It has the lie or the misinformation or whatever, the error, whatever you want to describe it, that got us into this war in Iraq.
We used to call it propaganda when I was a kid.
Yeah, and sometimes the best propaganda is also the truth.
Right.
But in this case, this was all, you know, BS manufactured. That, you know, the Obama administration's, pardon me, continued efforts to do whatever it was doing. The cascade of stuff that we saw with respect to against President Trump. All of these things have consequences. And so, you know, when you look at countries that have had a lot of coup d'etats, you know, in their history, and people wonder why they're not as democratic as Dixville Notch today, it's you cannot divorce what happened, the history and the experience that these people had from the way in which they act today. And we are setting the stage with this kind of heavy-handed authoritarian and misdirection of the state in a society, in a polity that is where the people are supposed to be the sovereign through their elected representatives. They are supposed to be the ones who actually know. Right, we are setting the stage for some very, very bad things. Now, the left and the mainstream media will focus on Donald Trump and say he is, of course, you know, the danger.
The
right, it's all
bath.
About Trump.
Right,
right. It's all about Trump. Right, but the fact of the matter is, the real danger is what they've been doing for the last 7 years. They, if this country ever does go into an authoritarian direction, the people in power now, the people in power for the last 8 years, the bipartisan combine that's been running this country in the 21st century, those are the people who are going to be more responsible than anybody else for what comes next. So this idea of one guy coming in and creating this, it's just ludicrous. And, you know, again, I think if people read this article, if they read the one I wrote for American Greatness on the deep state in the 2024 election, they read the one I wrote for you, John, about the Gaza crisis hurtling for disaster,
right?
And or about the other earlier one for the American Conservative on the lessons from the Turkish coup, you'll see a theme in there, and the theme is the extraordinary short-sightedness and irresponsibility of elites when confronted by challenges to their authority and power, because that's what this is all about, and that applies equally to the Ukraine war. The only reason why we haven't ended it is because the powers that be do not want to face the voters having, quote-unquote, lost the election, or lost the war. So they'll continue to pretend that this is a going concern, that the Russians haven't basically brought it to the point of almost officially ending it here.
Well, what does it say? What does it say to the American people that a 30-plus-year veteran of Central Intelligence, National Security Council, and the State Department. In other words, if you took a stereotype of a stereotypical look, you would say, this is the man, the deep state man. And right. I know that you're not, because you're my brother and I know you. But I mean, when people hear this coming from a source they might want to think about as a deep stater, how are they supposed to make sense of it? What are they supposed to think so that they're not trampled by reality, because it'll come to them?
Well, I would say the first thing is never base your point of view or your arguments on authority. Okay. So just the fact that I have this resume, shouldn't detract from anyone's reading of the actual article that I write.
Yes.
And to focus on the arguments that I make. That's step number one. Focus on what is being presented. And then if you have issues, have legitimate questions about this or that and the other thing, don't take it on the word of somebody, not in my case or anybody else's case, is that this is a person who knows, therefore we should just follow and fall into line. No. Think for yourself, read and study for yourself. And that means even people who aren't professional, just normal people, you can read it, you can understand, and right. then you can continue to dig and ask questions. Because guess what? Right. If you're really thinking about it, you will have questions, right?
And ask the why. Now, why is this being presented to me? You know, that's the first right. question and that people will
overlook. Exactly. And I would also say there are many, many people in the military, in the federal government, and other places that love this country, that care deeply about it. They see what the issue is. They do their duty, okay? And yes. They are worried. So, you know, we're in this extraordinary moment, and I'm just glad that I've had the opportunity to be able to talk and write about that, to have the experiences, and now to be in a position where I can relay those in a way that I think is useful. But again, I think the bottom line is read what I'm saying or read what you're saying. Read. Right. Read it. Don't just say, oh, this is the guy.
He said, yeah, some guy said, right. some guy. Yeah.
right.
Or yeah, some guy lead. Said, and he knows. So, you know, I would like to think that people would be interested in what I'm saying and would think highly of me and trust me and all that stuff. That's great. But just look at the articles. Look at what we're laying out. This is, you know, part of what I'm describing here is, a big part of it is just this is what's going on factually. And I'm pointing out something that you're probably not going to be getting in a variety of ways. And so I'd say, again, read first. Read and think. That's the thing that'll save anybody.
I go to it when you, yeah. And when you go to, quote unquote, mainstream media and you see the headlines are all the same across the board, ask why do you think that is? You know, why are people running with the bloodbath? Trump calls for a civil war. It's going to be a bloodbath. You know, why is everyone running in that? Is it just laziness or is it they just want this guy to, you know, be taken down to the, you know, to the dock and torched because they don't believe he stands for anything? And that they bring it. And that's,
or
that's
how about the, this? How about this? They, what they want is to torch him
yeah.
because they have, they're making money.
Oh, yeah.
Their agenda. Yeah. See, I don't, when you tell me, and this is to both of you guys, when you're telling me that you love the United States, that you love democracy, that democracy dies in darkness, isn't that what the Washington Post says? while you foment a Russia collusion story against the president of the United States that was a lie, that was built on a cheap dossier written by a drunk from Britain, a fake spy from Britain, and he makes this dossier up about, you know, the BuzzFeed say that there was the golden showers that he was urinated everything. Upon by hookers, right, to destroy him.
Yeah.
And who are the people behind it? Well, it wasn't who are the people behind it?
Well, this gets back to the fundamental problem. The only people who are the chumbalones, the people who did that, count on the American people
yes.
being the chumbalones here. Nobody else is fooled by this. Everybody knows in Turkey what's going on. Everybody knows in Eastern Europe who's had experience with this kind of operation.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not... The only people who are fooled by this
are American consumers of news.
American people, yes.
The American consumers, it's pathetically sad. It's like when we have Dana Bash and other morons like Nicole Wallace and Jake Tapper and people like this lecturing us, lecturing Americans.
Well, they're morons, John, but they're also cynics. I mean, they're also manipulative. It's not that they're – many of them actually believe the stuff that they are putting out. Some of – remember what was it Ben Rhodes from Obama's team said about the 27-year-old reporters who know nothing and easily manipulated? A lot of people will fall for that, right? Yeah. But a lot of people are cynics and BSers. And what I discovered, you know, in my obviously not over the course of time, but as I wrote about in the article, in this particular case, when it comes to U.S. policy in the Middle East and the support for the PKK in Syria, it's being done out of a combination of cynicism and an extraordinary ignorance about, in this case, Kurdish society, actual aspirations, history, all of those sorts of things. And that it's emblematic of the way our policy has failed so badly in the Middle East. And I would say, I would submit to you that this is a template for a variety of other failures, including Ukraine and including the border and including almost everything else that we've talked about or haven't talked about, like the deindustrialization of the United States, everything else. It all operates according to the same plan. Remember when, you know, coal miners or whomever were losing their jobs and the answer was to learn to code, you know, all of that kind of, it's that same liberals, kind of, it's that same attitude, that same mentality and, you know,
learn to code.
Now,
Take a steel worker, 40 years of steel worker, learn to code.
Yeah, just learn to code. Yeah, I think, you know, forgive me, I think I'm, you know, again, ranting a little bit, like I've been doing lately on your show, but I think it's like, it's really important to consider why it is that this is the template that keeps going. You know, somebody wrote in Turkey that, you know, it's, you know, probably some of the generals know what I've been laying out. You know, he was reading, the guy was reading my article saying this, you know, the generals understood this, but I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of these people are just clueless and they just don't understand where this goes and they don't understand these things because they don't bother to look or they don't bother to pay, you know, put in the time to pay attention to understand what's going on. This we do these things and it's a constant repetition of the way we're doing it, which is why we keep failing and it's got to stop. And it may just be that, you know, the genius of the founding fathers was to try to set up a system whereby this kind of imperial activity was actually made more complex and therefore difficult, and that might actually discourage people, like giving the Congress the power to declare war. That would prevent an executive from just running, doing whatever he wants. But it's, again, it's the genius of the American bureaucrat that they've essentially circumvented the Constitution in this respect. And so now, you know, the presidents get to do what they want. And this is precisely, of course, what Eisenhower was warning about 60 years ago.
Nicholas,
that's just playing all the time, yeah.
Nicholas Cass, senior executive with the Alexandrian Group, former CIA and State Department and National Security Council official. Everything that you guys are talking about brings the Chicago way. This is like the Chicago way and the Chumbalones writ large.
It's international edition. It's like House Hunters. Well, Nick,
how you doing, Your Highness?
It's interesting. I mean, we used to do nation building, but people were looking to us as Americans being like, you know, it was democracy, right? It was the idea that, hey, look, our people get to vote. We get to pick and choose. We get to see the things we want. And now it's not that. It's, America's coming to town to mess with our stability. And look what they're pushing. It's the, you know, the PKK, this ultra-Marxist mentality and this idea. And that doesn't look good. It's not the idea of freedom and the vote and choose your, officials and have a voice. It's now this is the way or the highway. And it's totally different.
We don't want to be killed by Assad. So now we have to, elevate our family and turn our families into supporters of the rainbow.
Right. Land? Turn away from our own culture adopt this. Yeah.
Especially because when you consider that so much of the opposition to Assad and to Saddam, the Ba'athist party, was precisely by people who didn't want to adopt not only the heavy-handed oppression, but also this sort of approach. And, you know, in Turkey back in the 90s, they started to coin this term, Sudyaleşmek or Sudyaleşmek. Sudyalaştırmak, whatever, which was basically to Syrianize, to become Syrian. And what they meant by that was that Turkey was operating, the Turkish Kemalist state was operating just like the Ba'athist state in Syria or in Iraq. In other words, this dictatorial, heavy-handed hostility to normal people and their customs and ways. And the idea that we would take a species of that, you know, I mean, because Ba'athism and communism and all these isms, secular isms, are all coming from the same sort of root in a way. And we would use that to be our brand in the Middle East. It's got to be one of the most stupid things I've ever heard about. And it's something that we've replicated in a variety of places. Again, remember those... remember those classes in Afghanistan where we were teaching modern arts to Afghan women and, you know, all of those sorts of things that were pointless and beyond the scope of bureaucrats to do. You know, we just have this deep-rooted issue and problem, and it's a sort of perversion of the puritanical spirit. And now we're taking this new ideology and we're with the same kind of fervor as the Puritans are trying to impose it in other areas. And they're like, thank you. I really don't want that, but there's no scope for that. You can't, you can't resist it. You can't say no.
What is the old, what is the old saying? Maybe it was said in Turkish. It's for the people in spite of the people. How do you say that, Nick?
Yeah. Oh God, I'd have to look.
Well, isn't that what we're talking about? In other words,
basically you were.
Right.
We know what's best for you. We our people of authority will impose our will upon you to make you feel better, right?
Yeah.
Whether you're American or a Syrian. Yeah. Or
no, it's basically we the elite know better what you want than you. And this is what you will get and you will sit down and like it. And that's basically the way it should be. That's the order of the universe, and
that's
so be it.
The and credo of Chumbalones everywhere.
Shut up and take it, Chumbalone. Yeah, right.
But this is the important thing to focus on, I think, for the American people when you think about these our policies in the Middle East, our policy in Gaza, our policy in Ukraine, and all these other places. Think about this. What is it that you're really being told? What is it that you think is really, you know, the way this is really being understood outside of the bubble that they're trying to create for you? And why is it that the American people are always the last to know? Why? And that will, you know, obviously, if you're thinking about the way in which the media operates, the extraordinary extent to which the United States government has been involved in suppression of social media and other things. And there's going to be a Supreme Court case on that soon, if it's not already started.
Right.
All of these things are very, very foreboding signs about the nature of this, where we're going. And again, what we're doing now, what we've done for the last 8 years, the BS that we've told each other, has told ourselves officially, the official BS that we've told ourselves for 8 years, this will have implications for the way in which we live and our children live down the road, and it's not looking good. So if we want to sort of minimize the damage there, we have to think about what it is and how we're going to do that. And, it's a very, very daunting daunting task right now. Very, very kind of worrisome.
Well, Nick, It's always wonderful to have you, and I feel like I'm in class, but you know, I'm getting the real truth, getting stuff that, but it's great. I mean, I just learned so much, but I can't let you go without getting a brotherly story from the Cast Boys growing up. You got to give me something. And the last time we talked about John taking on the whole neighborhood because your dad made him. But what do you got? Give me something good on John. Did you ever catch walking on John dancing to ABBA or something?
All the books you stole from me. How about this? All the books you stole from me. All the
20 years after. That's all I'm going to say.
All the. It's the three. That's
20 years
Dumas.
After
that's
the Viscount of Bragg. You know, the Viscount of Bragg alone. All right. Jim. So let me just tell this real quick one. Okay. My brother, when we were living, we had our house. We were kids, and you know, John was the eldest brother, so he had his own room, and my brother Pete and I would have another room. And of course, we were always having a good time as little kids, talking and yakking and everything like that. And John, who often terrorized us, was you know, in the other room, and then liked his room, but also wanted to like participate in what we were doing.
Hey
and
guys,
my brother, exactly. And my brother Peter and I, remembering, you know, the you know pounding that we may have gotten earlier in the day, decided to you know sort of you know. Keep them out. And one of the ways we would do that would be by yelling at the top of our lungs that John was coming into our room to kick our ass, even when he was coming in with the best of intentions. And of course, that led to the expected sanction. So you know, we didn't. Classic. You know, we had old school parents, and so they did not believe in sparing the rod too much. So that was a tactic that we would use. But John would
do. You're a bunch of weasels. You just go like, John, leave us alone. And
right,
Dad
exactly.
I could hear Dad coming up the stairs. I'm like, what? I'm screwed. Yeah. You know, right?
But here's how John would do things, okay? He would like you would do something to aggravate him, and he would chase you down, make you run into the staircase and fall. Right. So you'd be on the stairs, on your belly, arms and legs out. Right. And you would be expecting the blow, expecting the hammer fist on the shoulder blade or something. And you'd be tightening up. And it
never
would never
punch
come.
To the face. Always
no, never punch
to the
face.
Back.
But he would be like, you'd be waiting for that hammer fist blow to the shoulder blade. And then it wouldn't come. And so you'd relax. And you turn your head, and as you relaxed your muscles, you, of course, made yourself more vulnerable. And that's so he would wait until you were relaxed and, you know, not expecting it, and then he would nail
you. That's terrible.
So, I know, it's horrible. And so then we actually obviously enlisted nuclear weapons against him. But that's the typical stuff we would do.
All I know is that when it came time, when we were much older and we were doing things in the bedroom that had nothing to do with bedroom activities except expanding our minds with the substance. And
speak for yourself.
And I'm the one that took the fall.
Really?
I'm the
well,
one.
The
Dad,
big brother.
Dad's like, what is this?
Big brothers are for, John.
I took That's the right. fall.
You
for the pot, the great. Pot smokers, my God!
I don't know what you're talking about. Now right. You're just like, completely,
don't completely let the kids, don't let your kids hear this one. Yeah,
that's right. Okay. Anyway,
Well, that was a good one, Nick. I appreciate that. Well, thanks, I love
man.
The peek inside the Castle Kingdom back in the day.
Yeah.
Well, Nick, always good to have you.
Thank you, guys.
Keeping on in Romania and keep the eyes and ears to the ground because we love the insight, love you know seeing what we're not getting from the other, quote, media here, news here. So it's always good to have you on.
You will not
Thanks,
read
guys.
This. Nick, congratulations to you and to your family and to the American Conservative for publishing this excellent piece. Most needed, most wanted, and I loved it. And I feel like the next time we talk, I think I feel like sacrificing a couple of chickens for the gods of democracy that
was a great
many
time.
Of them. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that another time. For Nicholas Cass, executive now with the Alexandrian Group, former National Security Council member, Central Intelligence Agency member, and State Department, U.S. State Department, a longtime hand in Turkey and the Middle East and throughout the Aegean. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, friend of cats, friend of pies, never made me one since I got sick, and I've been wanting to, you know, explode my sugar ratio. And me, John Cass, executive editor of johncassnews.com, where you always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. Join us again next time for the Chicago Way podcast, won't you? On WGN Plus.